across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
Strikes, as the junior doctors are on strike, 48-hour strike. My goodness, it got lively on the radio this morning after one of the junior doctors on the strike said that some of them are struggling to pay the bills, including those on 62 grand a year. Bang! It went ballistic on the radio. Have a listen. The Stephen Nolan Show! Welcome along to yet another Nolan Show. We've had the latest radio listening figures out. Thank you once again for making us the biggest show in the country. Thank you once again for supporting this programme over the last 20 years or so. Simple contract. We take the news, and no matter who you are, you can talk about it. We want you to talk about it. We want you to fight for your rights. We want you to fight for your voice, and we will empower you to do so. 03030 80 55 55. The lines into the BBC are open right now. Let's have a look at this junior doctor strike, shall we? It's begun. 48-hour strike action today. It's going to affect lots of surgeries as well as procedures. They've been postponed. Hundreds of outpatient appointments. The strike is over pay. Doctors, junior doctors say they are down 30% in real terms since 2008. The Department of Health are saying, well, look at the 9 to 10% pay increase that you've got. Be piling into your pay packets, they say, in June next month. And Robin Swan says, look, he can't do this. He can't find the money from somewhere. And if he did, and he gives it to junior doctors, he's saying, well, why wouldn't we give it to nurses and porters and surgeons? And he says that would then cost over £1 billion. I've been speaking to Dr. Fiona Griffin. Fiona is standing on the picket line right now.
So I am currently at the Grosvenor Road entrance to the Royal Victoria Hospital. And I'm here with many of my colleagues, and we are on strike today for better pay.
And why is this necessary, Fiona?
So, Stephen, I'm sure you're aware, over the past 16 years, our pay has been reduced by about 30% because of inflation and then sub-inflationary pay awards. We've been asking to work towards some of that pay restoration. We're not getting anywhere. The last time we went on strike on the 6th of March, that opened up some communication with the Department of Health. We've had a few meetings. Nothing has been positive in terms of a pay offer. So we're back out here again today.
Well, the Department of Health are saying, Fiona, that they've offered arbitration and it's been turned down.
So they've offered arbitration, but we haven't started a negotiation. And where the minister has said is that his starting point is zero and he will not move from that. So I don't know how anyone is going to arbitrate or mediate on a starting point of zero. My understanding was that mediation started if both sides had something to give. And my understanding from having met the minister yesterday morning was that he doesn't have anything to give. So I'm not sure what mediation would actually resolve at this point.
But if he doesn't have anything to give, what do you want them to do?
Well, I think that, first of all, the minister and the Department of Health need to seriously consider what needs to be prioritised. And I understand that delivering a health service needs to be delivered by doctors and nurses and other staff, and those staff need to be prioritised. And the decision to not prioritise staff, Stephen, I think is a political decision. And I think that we need to be realistic about what we're asking for. We are certainly realistic. We're just asking for something to work towards our pay restoration. We're not asking for it all at once. We just want something to keep doctors in post in Northern Ireland to serve the public in Northern Ireland.
So, look, it's about... Well, Robin Swan is saying, the Health Minister is saying that there is no magic money tree. They're also pointing out that when there was the ballot for industrial action was launched, junior doctors had received no pay award for 23-24, and they're saying that's no longer the case. They're saying the National Pay Review Body has been implemented in Northern Ireland, and for junior doctors, they say, that'll bring an average pay increase of 9.07%. Those in their first year, a 10.68% uplift.
Yeah, so that actually hasn't been received yet, and that is not due to be received until the end of June.
Correct.
But that was a pay award that was announced last July. Our colleagues in England got that in September, and we're getting it in June the following year. So big, big, big delays. And while that is, that was a recommended pay uplift from a nationally recognised body that reviews our pay. It's not enough. It doesn't
10% isn't enough.
Well, in the face of 30% of pay erosion that we faced over the past 16 years, it's really not. And given the level of inflation we're at last year, it's just keeping us afloat. I mean, many of my doctors are not able to afford to pay their exams, their mandatory registration fees, their portfolio fees, their training courses. Doctors here are really genuinely struggling. And what we're seeing
is struggling to pay the bills, are they?
Absolutely, yes. One of my colleagues actually last summer had her mortgage. She had to, you know, redo her mortgage after the 2 years, and her mortgage fee went up by £600. Like, the doctors don't have £600 extra in their paycheck. I don't know if many people in Northern Ireland.
Well, before that 9-10% uplift, the average total salary of junior doctors as a cohort in Northern Ireland during 2023. Was £62,423.
So
how's a junior doctor struggling to survive on that? £62,000.
That is an average across people who are in their between their first year of training, between their, you know, right up to maybe 10 or 12 years experience. So averages, I refute that that is actually a plausible way to determine whether or not a doctor is performing, as if they're struggling, if they're able to pay their bills.
Well, the average total salary of a foundation doctor was £45,777 quid. They're struggling on that, are they?
There's doctors that are struggling on that, absolutely. Costs are rising, house prices are rising, food prices are rising, childcare costs are rising. Everyone's in it. We're all in a cost of living crisis here at the minute. Even people are struggling. And what we're finding is that Why are we expecting our doctors to struggle? Why is it okay for anyone to struggle? And what we're saying here today, Stephen, is that doctors are leaving the country. The health service in 5 years' time is not going to be able to function if we do not have doctors. Junior doctors are the future. They're the consultants and the specialists and staff doctors of the future. And if we're not looking after our junior doctors, there will be no doctors here in the country to look after ourselves, our parents, our family, our neighbours. The health service will fall apart without us.
Have a listen to the Health Minister, Fiona.
Because all our public sector workers were impacted by pay restraint. And the issue of pay restoration therefore spans our entire public sector. So I want to set in context. If we had that mythical, magical money tree to shake, and I were able to commit to the BMA request of 32% uplift for our junior doctors, even over a longer term, that would require a further £52 million per annum before any other pay awards are considered. So to amend the public sector pay policy, adopt it UK-wide for all of our employed doctors and dentists would require over £210 million additional each year before pay awards. I don't believe this House would really want me to make an exception just for junior doctors in that regard. To turn to nurses, paramedics, social workers, social care workers, and say, sorry, this special pay uplift is not for you. So give that tree another shake and we could maybe dislodge another £1 billion, which would be sought by Agenda for Change staff to restore their pay levels. Likewise, other ministers would not relish delivering the same message to teachers, to police officers, to civil servants, to public transport workers and all the other workers in key services. That, in a nutshell, is why pay restoration is not just a cross-cutting issue for the executive, but an issue that it cannot resolve given its limited fiscal headroom and current acute budgetary pressures. So we must realise those hard realities.
So there you are in the picket line. That's why the minister is saying no. That's why he's unlikely to say yes.
Stephen, I think what the minister was getting at, I think what the minister was trying to do there is he was trying to pit doctors and nurses and social workers and police officers and civil service workers all against each other. This isn't a race to the bottom, Stephen. Everybody in society deserves to be paid well. The people who train for years and years and years and deliver absolutely essential services and high quality services should be paid well.
But he's saying that would cost over £1 billion.
So he's saying if that's
just for the health service.
That's the cost of running a health service, Stephen. It's pricey.
Sorry?
It's expensive to run a health service. And what the minister has just said is that actually to restore pay for everyone would cost £1 billion more. But on what he's just admitted to is actually he's underpaying doctors, nurses, dentists, staff across the board.
What he is saying is that if he gives you a pay increase, then why wouldn't that apply to doctors and nurses? And then he's saying on top of that, so why would every other minister that is in charge of public sector workers not say, well, look, we've got to do the same? So then you get into teachers, then you get into police officers. Where is this money coming from, Fiona?
The thing is, Stephen, is that we are all underpaid in Northern Ireland, and this is not a race to the bottom. It feels like we're racing and pitting staff against each other for a race to the bottom. Health service and public services are run on the goodwill and run by actually underpaying staff. That's how we're able to afford things in Northern Ireland, because we underpay staff.
But you are where you are now. You've got to be realistic, because this is affecting patients, isn't it?
Of course it's affecting patients, yeah.
So
it's also affecting doctors.
So you think it is realistic for Northern Ireland to suddenly find well over £1 billion and spread that throughout the public sector? You think that's realistic this year, do you?
So I haven't said at any stage that we're ever expecting this all at once, Stephen. We are incrementalists. And we've said many, many times to the Minister, to the Department of Health, to the Health Committee, that we're happy to do this in stages. We just want a little bit more than the pay review body this year, and a little bit more from the pay review body above their recommendations for next year. We've never said we wanted this all in one go. We understand that that is not possible. We understand that that is not something that any minister would be able to do. We're reasonable. We're rational. We know that we're only going to be able to achieve our asks in small bits. And all we want is a seat at the table each year to negotiate that little bit extra each year.
So how much do you want this year to come off strike?
If the Minister of the Department of Health were to come forward with a figure, we would definitely sit down and negotiate.
But what is the... what's your starting position?
Above DDRB recommendation. If the Department of Health want to come to us with a figure, any figure, we will sit down and we will take that as a starting point and we will work with them. We do not have a hard press. It has to be X or else we'll not come off strike. We are willing to work with anything that the department is willing to give us.
We're talking a lot, Fiona, about numbers today, because that's what the strike is about. But tell me about the pressures of your job and what it feels like to be a junior doctor.
Look, it's incredibly pressured. What we're seeing is, and I've said it before, though, lots of doctors are leaving to go elsewhere for better pay, better working conditions. Whenever some doctors leave, they leave rotas short-staffed, and then the folks who do remain end up having to work longer or work, you know, as hard as two people to cover the gap. And we're finding that impact in training and ability to get away from, you know, an emergency department clerk and patients to see the patients who are presenting, to see the people who have come to clinic or to get to operating theatres. And those are the skills that are really needed for doctors to develop and to become consultants and specialists of the future. So, I mean, they're all knock-on effects. And everything at the minute it feels to be in a downward spiral. So, I mean, we're out here today. Nobody wants to be out on a picket line today. Stephen, we all want to be in work, getting trained, providing a service. I have to remember as well that all the doctors here today are all patients themselves. You know, they'll have all accessed healthcare before. We all have families as well. And what we're seeing happening to patients and the waiting lists and things, it's actually heartbreaking to see what is happening to the health service. And we're in a position now where we need to stand up and be heard and say, look, we need to keep doctors and other staff members in post in order to keep the health service going. So in 5 years' time, patients can access a basic level of service. In 10 years' time, they can access the basic level of service.
Do you really think that's going to happen, given where the dire state the health service is in?
Pardon?
Do you really think it's going to happen, given the dire state the health service is in, that we're going to be able to access if we're sick, timely care, timely operations. You think it could be turned around that quickly, do you?
I think we don't have any other choice. There has to be some transformation of the health service, and in order to transform, we need the staff. Otherwise, you know, they're just empty buildings. There needs to be some drastic investment into the health service. There needs to be investment into staff groups, into buildings, into services, in order to actually save this. Because the way it feels is that it's going downhill rapidly, and we're not trying hard enough to claw this back.
Fiona, thanks very much for talking to us today. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's Dr. Fiona Griffin, who's on the picket line. You're reacting a lot to this morning. Jennifer Lurgan. Morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Stephen.
What do you make of that?
Stephen, if somebody can't live and pay a mortgage and getting £65,000 per year...
62, I think.
62,
on average.
Pardon me. 62,000. Stephen, if you can't pay a mortgage on 62,000... May I ask what kind of house is she living in?
Well, she says that junior doctors are struggling.
And I'm not disputing that. I'm struggling too. And I'm on about a third of that, if I'm one of your notorious classroom assistants. Now, if you can't buy a house at 62, if you can't afford to live on 62,000, is there something wrong with buying a house at 300,000 and being able to afford it? And as time goes on, your wage goes up, you then look at the bigger houses. Live within your means. The Joneses are very, very, very hard people to keep up with.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying that the junior doctors at £62,000 average should be able to live within their means and live within that. Buy a house that they can afford. And as time goes on and their wages go up, then look at a bigger house, a dearer house. They do a great job, I'm not disputing that, but so does society. So does the wee woman down in Sainsbury's, the wee woman down in Tesco. They do a great job too.
So what are we going to do if we've got this situation, and this is the situation, that doctors are paid better, Jennifer, in the south? They're paid better, for example, in the likes of Australia. How many of them are we going to be able to lose? Those doctors going for better pay, better conditions, before
living
we realise we've got a
dearer.
Crisis?
Living conditions are dearer in the south. So if you're paid 62,000 in the south, you're paying dearer for accommodation. Indeed, you're paying dearer than Tesco in the south. A lot of the doctors leaving, Stephen, are going to private. So you'll see a doctor leaving and going every Thursday to work in a private one of the clinics.
By the way,
they're not necessarily leaving for Australia.
By the way, the 62 grand a year average salary that a junior doctor is getting during 2023, that's before their 10% pay increase, which is coming next month.
Again, I say live within your means. They do a great job. I'm not disputing that. They chose their career and they knew what it was going to be. And whenever experience comes with them in a couple of years' time, look at a bigger house then.
I think Big Barbara will disagree. You're in hospital.
I'm in the Lagan Valley at the moment, Stephen.
Are you all right?
Yeah, well, I'm not all right, but I'm in anyway.
Okay.
And I think the doctors aren't all to get their raises. And another thing too, the nurses and the doctors here has been looking after me since Monday. And I can't complain about anything, only they're overworked. And they deserve all the money they get. And that's...
But the wee woman down in Tesco's overworked. The wee man, the taxi driver's overworked. There's not a person, I don't think, in society that's not overworked. And I agree, doctors are overworked. But so is Mrs. So-and-so in Tesco. So is Mr. Taxi Driver.
Yeah, well, Mr. Taxi Driver's
at the moment. The only person not overworked is Mr. Stephen Nolan there.
I was waiting to have a pop at me. I'm overworked dealing with you.
Mr. Taxi Drivers at the moment has put their prices up that much. Pensioners like me can't afford to get a taxi.
I'm saying everybody is due a wage, but I'm equally saying you don't see a Tesco worker, and I use that as an example, living in an £800,000 house. That's what I'm saying. And if you're bright enough to understand what I'm saying, and I'm not talking about you, I'm talking general.
Yeah, but you're presuming these people are on... You're just leaping all over the place, Jennifer. Now you're presuming these people are on 800 grand houses. They're junior doctors.
Well, if they weren't... If they were in a £300,000 house, they'd be able to afford the mortgage. That Ben, lady said, that Julie or Fiona.
Ben Laurie's joining us as well from the newsletter, editor of the newsletter. You've little sympathy for these strikers, Ben.
Well, the main reason I want to speak about it is the whole coverage of strikes since they began about 2 years ago in Northern Ireland, really accelerated over the last year, is how one-sided the reportage of this has been. Strikers have not been given the difficult interview that you just gave the junior doctor there, and none of the wider issues behind it, none of the good things that public sector workers get, like pensions that people in the private sector will never get. My goodness, if the average private sector worker realized how much more generous the public sector pensions are, I think there'd be a lot less sympathy. So it's not a lack of sympathy for junior doctors in general. They're incredibly important. Doctors are the linchpin of the health service. Every country in the Western world recognizes that, and there are many countries that pay them more. And it, by the way, I think it's nonsense to say that junior doctors are living in £800,000 houses. Recently, a story I was working on, £800,000 is about the top wealthy, most expensive 1% of houses in Northern Ireland. So there's very, very 99 people out of 100 in Northern Ireland are not living in £800,000 houses, and junior doctors couldn't possibly afford that on their wages. However, doctors are recognised in their pay. This is the really important thing. There's no doubt that pay across the public sector has fallen behind inflation, and there's a lot of complicated reasons for that, including soaring energy prices and so on. But doctors are paid much more. You were citing the figures on which the very beginning doctors are on. The doctors start on more than £30,000. And that in Northern Ireland is at or just above the average wage on their very first year. So these are, you were talking about foundation year one. So these are very misleading statistics about them earning £13 a year, as if they earn the same as somebody who works in a supermarket.
Yeah, but the figure I quoted, is it? I didn't quote that figure for a foundation
doctor.
No,
I know you didn't quote that figure, but that figure has reappeared in recent weeks ahead of these strikes. And you were talking about what the very beginning earn. Then there's the £62,000 figure, which is twice the average wage in Northern Ireland. And then when they move on to consultant, which very many of them do if they're specialising, they start on approaching £90,000. And that can be as soon as 10 or so years after they qualify. So here is my point. It's really important that doctors are recognised for the massive levels of training that they do, the long years that they spend, first of all, studying in university, then training in hospitals and so on. It takes a long time for them to have the expertise that we need them to have. And they are much better paid than is implied by these actions. That is my point, as well as a more general point about a massive political and, I think, media failure in Northern Ireland to cover strikes in a balanced way, which there are arguments for taking action because people have fallen behind in inflation in their pay, and there are also arguments across the board in public sector in Northern Ireland, including, by the way, semi-public sector like the BBC, is very well paid compared to the 75% of Northern Ireland that is not in those lines of work.
Look, the media discussion as to how the media has covered it is probably for another day. All I would say, all I would say is that if you ask the person who we interviewed from the BNA, it was during the last strikes, if they thought they got an easy ride, I think they'd grab you by the throat.
Metaphorically,
they did not.
I'm not saying that everyone in the media. I was just saying that you had given a robust interview to that. I'm saying I haven't seen many interviews like I have been on the BBC more than once, giving the counterpoint to two union officials. And what I'm saying is that there are many people in Northern Ireland who are sympathetic to the strikes, and many people who are driving as they listen to this, or at home as they listen to this, or whatever they're doing, who are less sympathetic to the strikes because they're putting it in the context of the pressures that everybody has faced with energy bills, for example, which, by the way, are plunging. I wrote a story recently about how oil is down to almost where it was last, home heating oil, last summer. And that's after the ongoing war in Ukraine, that's after the terrible war that's arisen in the Middle East. So what I'm saying is that a lot of the inflation pressures are easing. A lot of the wider packages, and this is crucial, of pensions in the public sector. Remember, the pensions that are still available in the public sector are not available anywhere in the private sector because they're so expensive, they bankrupted companies. And I'm saying that this has to be part of the discussion. And there has been a serious failure, not by you, but there's been a serious failure for this to be part of the discussion.
Another part of the discussion, though, Ben, is a reality check that market forces apply to the NHS as well as anywhere else. And those market forces currently, what are we going to do if doctors are being tempted and are taking up that temptation to leave Northern Ireland, to elsewhere, because they're getting paid more money and they're getting better conditions? What do we do?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. And in answer to the previous caller who was saying about expenses are more in the Republic, as if the pay for example, for consultant doctors in the Republic is far higher than it is in Northern Ireland. The pay for the equivalent level of expertise doctor in the United States is probably twice the time the rate that it is in Northern Ireland. And the pay for doctors in Australia, for example, and in Canada is way above what it is across the UK.
So that means out of the finite pot of money that each of those countries have, they prioritize and value in terms of money those people more than we do.
So what I'm saying is that while that is a very important point, and there's no question that that's something that has to feed into the debate, the idea that doctors are very badly paid is wrong, because what happens here is because of that international competition, because of the value of doctors, because of the expertise that they have, they are paid very quickly as junior doctors. Very rapidly, they're paid more than the minimum wage, almost immediately. And within a few years, they're averaging twice the minimum wage. And then when they move on to consultant status at the beginning, they're starting at three times the minimum. So what I'm saying is this. I'm saying that there's a balance here between the fact that doctors around the Western world are highly valued, need to be highly valued, and in the UK are not, and traditionally haven't been, as highly paid as they are in some of these countries. And by the way, there's a really big question whether they should be as highly paid as they are in America. That creates its own problem. So there's a lot to be said for the UK. What I am arguing about is whether or not the doctor situation in Northern Ireland is so bad that they should be going on strike.
Well,
and that I say is an argument that I don't think has been met.
And let's see what our listeners say this morning. It is so bad. Their pay is so bad, according to Dr. Fiona Griffin, that those doctors are struggling to pay their mortgages, to pay their bills. So a foundation doctor, 42 odd grand, the average salary of a junior doctor, 60 odd grand. Do you think that means they're struggling? 0-30-30-80.
And Stephen, can I just come in on that?
Yes, Ben, of course.
If you're struggling on those salaries, which is far more than people in the media earn, and it's appropriate that doctors earn far more than people in the media, it's a much more specialised thing. If you're struggling on those salaries, then you can't organise your finances and you don't deserve sympathy.
That's pretty cutting. I'd like to understand those figures when we're saying doctors, junior doctors, are the worst paid in the UK. So I'd like to get you some of the figures around England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. And we'll see if we can get those onto the programme either today or tomorrow. I think that context and the actual figures around it is important. Maureen in Auchnacloy. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing all right today. Well, to be honest, I'm not feeling good today, if you're asking. Don't know what's wrong, I'm just not feeling right.
It could be the weather.
Don't know what's wrong. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, I really believe that everybody needs a pay increase, not just the doctors, not just the teachers, everybody in general. I just want to renew my insurance, and it is tripled from what it was from last year. Tripled from what it was last year.
I rang my crowd up. Mine's tripled. I was on the phone with them last week saying what is going on.
Yeah.
How can insurance triple when you haven't put in a claim? Like, what is going on?
Exactly. And well, you figure your insurance, your car insurance, just not just doctors, everybody in general, your insurance has tripled. Your cost of living has all gone up. Doctors, nurses, and teachers, a lot of professionals have to keep their certifications up. They have to pay for out of pocket now. The healthcare system doesn't always cover their seminars and things like that. They have to do a certain amount of contact hours that they need to do, and that's out of the hours of their work hours.
Maureen, thank you. Peter next. No. Morning, Peter.
Well, Stephen,
she's just triggered me, actually. I know we're talking about this, right? But she's triggered me about car insurance, and are lots of you experiencing the same thing? How the heck can car insurance treble in a year?
Well, you know what? I'm a taxi driver, Stephen, and it has put a lot of drivers out of business. You know, it's like everything. We're going back to the house. I've been waiting for a wee procedure. This is the second time, and that's cancelled again. You know, and I think, you know, it's all right everybody can ban tooting horns and support and all, but us patients are the victims of the strike. Also, if everybody's so supportive of it, let's put our house insurance up, let's put our tax up, and let's bring them water, and it'll pay for what we need.
So you want taxes to go up to pay for these pay rises?
Yeah, well, that's the only way it's going to happen. You know, we're beginning, it's not just, it's just...
You see...
It's school teachers.
You see, here's the score. If our taxes go up, it doesn't necessarily mean an improvement in services, does it? You could argue that the more pay people within these services get, the less there is for patients. It's coming out of a pot. If you put taxes up and put it into creating more operations, creating more people, more staff. That is a trade-off where you may not give people above inflation pay rises. So which would you choose?
Listen, Stephen, we've done the same. It's all false economy at the end of the day. We got a pay raise cost of living that the government give. Access cost is probably more since we got it. I'm not begging because I do a job. I take a job. I know what I'm paying. I think everybody's the same. You apply for a job. You see the wages. You accept the wages. And if you don't want like the wages, you don't take your job. It's the same as the taxi drivers. Your insurance went up. The fuel went up. Depot rents went up. So what the increase we got probably doesn't clear us. But we can't put it up anymore because we'll be out of business.
Alan in North Belfast is saying he nearly crashed the car. What's happened?
Here, Steve, I couldn't believe it when I heard that figure. £62,000 a year, and they say they can't live on that. And they put the car in the wall, Chapel Patrick. I had to pull over.
She says they're struggling. Now, that's an average. That's an average, but she said they're struggling on that.
£62,000 a year? I'm out working 60, 70 hours a week. And to see if I got half of that, I would be absolutely over the moon. I got a phone call on Monday from my insurance company. 29 years of being a taxi driver, no accidents, no claims, no convictions, no bonus, all that there, carry on. And they told me my insurance has gone up 80% from £1,000 to £1,800.
I know, it's crazy.
She even said to me, I know the wee girl.
Mine's gone from 500 to, from 550 odd quid to 1,800 quid. So I nearly wet myself.
I asked them for a full breakdown on how they arrived at that figure. And I asked them, are you now saying that I am now a severely dangerous driver in the space of a year, even though I've been with you for years insurance?
Yeah.
What's going on? Why are you not on these insurance companies and saying, what's the crack here? And their attitude is, well, you may have to work a bit more. You need a bit of a life. You're out working from 4 o'clock in the morning, you're finishing at 10, you're back on the roads at 1 and you're working till 10 that night, six days a week.
No,
what are you meant to do?
I hear you.
To see this time by Christmas, to see the amount of taxis is on the roads now, there'll be half of that. People are jacking it in. It's not worth it.
If we come back to what Dr. Griffin said, and look, emphasise it is an average salary I was talking about. Junior doctor starts an average of 40 grand a year of the 2023 cohort of junior doctors. No matter how many years they're in the job, the average is 60 odd grand a year, and she says they're struggling.
Well, look,
you're speechless.
For her to come on the radio is an absolute shabbos. She has a brass neck. You see, most people in Northern Ireland, they're probably living on less than half of that. So they want to put the taxes up to charge everybody else to pay for their big Range Rovers and their personalised rigs and their big £3,000 and £4,000 dogs that they have. She wants to catch herself on, get off that picket line and get back into it. They've absolutely...
They save lives. They save lives, Alan.
Yes, they save lives, but sure, the way things are going anyway.
And they've worked many years training themselves, paying for their own education. They're specialists at what they do. But that's different. Look, that's a different argument, how much they should be paid, than someone saying they're struggling enough. That's what you're reacting to.
What are you getting a year?
Me?
Yes.
Out of the BBC, 400
odd. What are you paying yourself a salary?
400 odd grand a year I get.
Jesus Christ. Well, why don't you give up a month's salary and give it to them people? In fact, don't give them anything. To see the classroom assistants, give it to them instead, because they deserve it more.
You see, I think, Alan, the separate matter that you're bringing up, okay? So let's park the fact that it was junior doctors there, but be it doctors, be it someone like me, where I earn a lot of money. I think what you are highlighting is really, really important. And it is the huge gap between those people who think that 20 and 30 thousand pounds a year of a salary is a really good salary, and other people who are on 60, 70, 80, hundreds of thousands of pounds a year. But in this small place of Northern Ireland, like any other society, you have that huge gap. Like if you were getting 50 grand a year from just what I'm hearing from you, you'd be delighted, right?
Be delighted? I'd be over the moon.
Yeah.
62 grand a year, and it's an absolute ridiculous, so it is. Yes, to save lives and all that, carry on, and it's very much appreciated. But they've got to understand here, listen, the real world, £30,000 in a working class home in Northern Ireland is huge. And they can't live off 60.
So what would you be taking home?
She wants to hit a renter.
What would you be taking home as a taxi driver?
By the time you pay everything out?
Yeah.
Stephen, we don't even get national minimum wage.
So what? Give me a sense. By the time you pay everything out, what type of money a taxi driver, not you, a taxi driver like you and your mates, type of money?
You and my mates. Well, see, before I make a penny each week, I have to make 480 quid before I make a penny. That's before I make a penny, and I couldn't even give you a figure. But we don't even get national minimum wage. You have a £20 a day diesel. You have the uptake of the car, the cleaning of the car, your insurance.
Would you be clearing 400 quid a week?
If you're lucky, if you put the hours in, if you're lucky,
that's 20 grand
a year.
And I mean,
putting the hours in.
Yeah.
So that's double shifting, a Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
You're away
from your family. You're out in the road from 4 in the morning. You're trying to get something and then you're back out again in the afternoon.
Listen.
And they can't live on £62,000 a year. I think it's an absolute disgrace.
It's what I bang on about all the time. That if you take a working class person like you, or look, the reason why the Nolan Show has the audience we have in terms of the number of people that listen to this is we have huge amounts of working class people that listen to this show. So, Alan, if you take someone that's working class, let's say they're on they clear 20 grand a year, they're bringing home 400 quid a week.
Right.
Now let's look at their child gets sick. They get sick. They've got acute pain. They cannot buy themselves off a waiting list. Rich people can. There is
exactly.
A two-tier system in Northern Ireland. They can't buy their children private tutoring. Rich people can. Tuition fees in university. They can't buy themselves those fees. Rich people can. And so therefore you have these huge brick walls in Northern Ireland between working class people and those people who, quite frankly, you know, 20 grand a year is kind of fun money to them. They spend that on furniture.
To see some of these personal age registration numbers they have, they must have paid 7 and 8 grand for them. I think it's a disgrace. Listen, you want to get on the floor of these insurance companies and ask them what's going on.
Ben Laurie, the discussion...
Ask them to give me a breakdown, because I did, and they refused to give me it.
Ben Laurie, just finally, the discussion here goes well beyond the health service. It's about a salary in Northern Ireland, what's a reasonable salary, and some people left speechless when they're hearing people on 60 grand a year saying they're struggling.
Yeah, I think that was a really big mistake. As I was saying, I think junior doctors should be paid amongst the highest of the professions, and they are paid much more than the average wage, and they probably deserve even more than that. But to say that you're struggling on that is very inappropriate. The first very good thing that has happened in Northern Ireland and across the UK is there's been really significant increases in the minimum wage. So there's very few people who work full-time who now earn less than 20,000 a year, as was the case. Was very, very common in all sorts of jobs. But there's a range of people earning between 20 and 30,000 a year. And as I said, the average wage in Northern Ireland is about £30,000 a year. It's actually higher in the public sector, lower in the private sector. MLAs earn £52,500 a year. And these are here's a statistic from the annual earnings figure research into Northern Ireland. The top 10% of people in Northern Ireland earn more than £59,000 a year. So 90% of people who work full-time in Northern Ireland earn less than £59,000 a year. In summary, what I'm saying is this. Doctors are one of the most highly paid, highly specialised and trained and difficult professions there is. They're valued around the world. They should be valued here. And it is reflected in the fact that their pay is far above average earnings. Okay. That's my essential point.
Ben Laurie, editor of the newsletter, thank you very much. We'll come back to more of your calls later in the programme. 03030 80 55 55. This morning, as part of BBC Comes to Town, we've sent Brendan down to Dunpatrick. He was raging. He had to get up early and all this morning, and he had to put trousers on. This is a series of events celebrating 100 years of the BBC in Northern Ireland. Brendan is down live at the local library in Dunpatrick. Morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning. Yes, unfortunately, I had to put jeans on this morning, so there's no shorts here, unfortunately. It is warm, mind you. But yes, I am live in Dunpatrick this morning in the local library here in Market Street. I'm here as part, as you said, the activities and events today to mark 100 years of the BBC in Northern Ireland. A special series of BBC roadshows have been taking place across locations throughout Northern Ireland this year. Now, Ballymena was the first location last month, and today it's Dunpatrick's turn. Yeah. Well, that's, yes, you can hear us quite loud here. Them cheers were coming from the students that are here with me today at the library here in Dunpatrick, and those students are from Blackwater Integrated College and St. Columb's High School in Crossgar. Now, what's a Nolan show without an ordinary Nolan show fashion? We've been having a debate here this morning around university and what you should do next. Now, all the students here are fourth years, but they're going into fifth year next year, and they'll be making them big decisions. I'm going to go to Eilish here first. Eilish, you've been chatting to me this morning, and you've been debating. You're basically saying, I want to go to university.
Yeah, I think that might be the route that I'd end up going down, as I feel a degree would be good for jobs that I'd like to do, and it adds more opportunities to, you know, jobs I'd like to do and bigger opportunities for my future.
Mm-hmm. And there's people smiling here. There's other students smiling because they were looking at you and they were saying, well, actually, what about the debt? What about all the money you're going to build up throughout the years? But that doesn't concern you.
No, not necessarily. As obviously, you know, the degree could increase my job and the wage, which I could eventually pay off my student debt.
Yeah, yeah.
What so job you're, does you're, she want to do, to Brendan?
No matter what. What
does Eilish want to be?
I'd like to go either go down the business route or the medical route.
Yeah, well, there you are. That's black and white. And well, we also have Rory here as well. Rory, you're the opposite. You're saying I'm not going to university. It's not for me.
Yeah, it's the debt puts me off. Like,
yeah, yeah. And what is you actually thinking of studying or going on to do?
I want to go down the sports route, like, because I'm big into my sports. But yeah, it's just the fact that university cost is so high. Yeah. It just puts me off going there.
Yeah, of course, of course. And then, Holly, you were saying as well that you're the same. You don't want to go near university either.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a route I want to go down either.
Yeah. And why is it? Because what is it you want to go on?
The job I want to do doesn't require me to go to university, so I don't see the point. Mm-hmm. Or, like, the cost, yeah. Just not worth it,
yeah,
for me.
What's the job you want to do?
I want to be an emergency control room operator.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, picking up 999 calls.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. That's quite unique, isn't it?
Why?
Yeah, thank you.
Why?
I really want to help people, but I don't think I could always react as fast as people would do in the field. And I want to be able to help people from, like, behind a screen and, like, get the emergency services to them.
Wow. Yeah, wow.
And do you not...
Yeah, that's quite interesting.
Do you not worry about the peer pressure of sometimes parents want to, and not just parents, society is encouraging you, look, you haven't really made it if you don't go to university. Now, that's nonsense, but do you feel that pressure?
No, not really. It seems more something that I want to do instead of other people. So, like, I'm doing it for me. And university is not important right now.
That is
in my case.
That is fantastic confidence that young lady has, Brendan. Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite unique as well. I don't think I've ever heard anybody at this age talking about that and thinking that far ahead, but that's really good. I've got Jack here as well. Jack, you are for university. You really are interested in politics. You're also part of the Northern Ireland Youth Assembly. So tell me a bit more about that.
So as a part of the Northern Ireland Youth Assembly, I am basically in a group of about 50 young people all across Northern Ireland and from multiple different backgrounds. Sure. And as a group, we split into three committees across a two-year basis, and we work on issues that affect young people or even just people in Northern Ireland. So, for example, I am in the Rights and Equality Committee.
Yeah.
So we work on fixing and talking about issues that young people may face across Northern Ireland, and we try to make it a more fair place. Mm-hmm. There's other committees across the board, such as key groups that fight addiction and set up more easily sought after ways to battle addiction and things that might help them get through it, because they don't want to necessarily have to tell their parents or maybe go to the police. They just want to get off of it normally.
Yeah, yeah. And Jack, you're involved. So you're how many people is involved in the Youth Assembly?
So,
because you've spoken there about committees as well, so there must be quite a number.
It's just those 50 people.
Yeah.
As the 50, we split up into the three and we work there for 2 years. I think after the first year, we will possibly split up and we will fight another group or another committee, mm-hmm. or we'll just stay in the two. We'll stay in the three committees for the 2 year basis. I'm unsure, but.
Yeah, and those 50 people then, do they represent, like any politician would, do they represent different constituencies throughout Northern Ireland? Or?
Well, because they're in...
Are you based in Downpatrick, I say?
Yeah, I live in Downpatrick, but I don't think they represent any constituencies. They're all from different backgrounds, so maybe people might see them as representing that area, and I think the Youth Assembly as a whole represents all of Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Okay. And Zara, you're also thinking about going to university.
Yeah.
You're involved in the agricultural side of things because you're part of the Angus beef producer group. I'm surprised I remembered that. So tell me about that.
In part of that, I'm actually in the ABP youth competition.
Sure.
And part of that, I'm in a group of four girls. We're against four other teams as finalists. And what we have to do is we basically got five cows and we have to rear them up until September.
Yeah.
And on part of that, we have to each have five cows.
Stephen has problems with cows in his house.
Rearing five cows? Why would you want to do that? What do you mean rearing them? Do you have to visit them? Do they stay at your house? What do they do?
No, I live in Crossgar, so they're not at my house, but they're at one of the other girls in my team's farm. And we basically go down there sometimes and we help raise them and all.
By doing what? All that muck?
Yeah. Well, they're out on the field now.
Listen, rather you than me. You enjoy that, do you?
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, you had a problem with cows there recently as well, didn't you?
Yes.
I woke up one morning to see these cows
trampling all over my garden. And then 2 weeks ago, I sent a picture of this out on Twitter. The sheep come in. And the sheep were pooing all over my grass. All this poo.
Wazar, I don't think there's any sheep part of your ADP,
no.
Is there? No,
it's just cows.
You're safe enough. You're safe enough. Well, young Elliot here is with us as well. Elliot, you're for university as well, aren't you? And you're kind of into sports. That's the
Like to go down the sports route. Obviously, I haven't thought about where I want to go, but hopefully in Scotland somewhere with good sports facilities and just to seek further education.
Now that's quite interesting. So you want to actually go to Scotland? You wouldn't think about staying here in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, obviously my dad told me about somewhere in Scotland. They've got really good sports teams, facilities, and that's obviously where I want to go to play football and hopefully make a professional.
Yeah, yeah. And would you want to study here or would you want to study in Scotland and then go further afield in Scotland?
I haven't really thought about that, but I probably think over in Scotland just to stay over there and try and play football.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What's his name?
This is Elliot.
Elliot, you know that the chance of making it as a professional footballer is very, very slim. Now, I'm not knocking you, but are you thinking to yourself, you're just going to go for it? Have you got a back plan if it doesn't work out? Or you're not thinking of failure in achieving that goal?
I've obviously got a backup plan, but it's also to do with sports. Try maybe taking up the coaching pathway with maybe the IFA.
Brilliant.
That's where I'm going with work experience in school. I'm going to the IFA to coach.
So what's your dream, mate? Who do you want to play for?
Millwall FC in the Championship.
Brilliant.
You've all worked out.
Brilliant.
You've all worked out.
Good luck.
Well, Stephen, guess what, Stephen? I've got another guy who's quite special, actually. He's known as a musical star here locally. We've got Jared. And Jared, you are going to star in Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, isn't that right?
Yep.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, we did a play, Oliver, last year, and I was very interested in it. And I wasn't actually in that play, but like I really liked it, so I decided to be in the play this year, and I got the lead role as Joseph.
Yeah, and Jared, that's in Columkill's High School as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and Jared is quite keen to do something, Stephen. He wants to sing the Nolan theme tune.
No.
Because he is a singer. He wants to sing it. He wants to sing it.
No.
He's told me he wants to sing it.
I don't
care. He's not going to be he's not going to be happy until he does.
Okay, then. All right, then.
Stephen Nolan Show!
He's been dying to do that since he's come in here.
Thank you, mate.
So, Stephen, I know we're short in time here, but yes, as I say, look, there's lots happening here today. Events actually kicked off last night with a recording of a special GAA social podcast. Well, there's lots happening today. If you're down in Downpatrick today, come down and have a look. You can try your hand at presenting the BBC weather forecast.
Really?
You can actually try. Yeah, you
BBC's
can actually have a go.
BBC's never offered that to me.
Well, you can try it, and you can try presenting the BBC News Bulletin.
They've also never offered that to me.
And I'm pretty sure I've seen Hugo Duncan knocking around there somewhere.
Oh, my goodness, wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Hugo was live in the square later on as well. And guess what? One, he who shall not be named, Vinny, he is knocking around as well later. Kate and Vinny
are
live in Easton College. Yeah, apparently so. And if you're about, you know, make sure and annoy him.
All right,
then
Brendan.
Listen, and then tomorrow, Anne-Marie Wallace is here with her pet podcast. So that's all happening as well.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Brendan. The Republic of Ireland, as we're hearing in the news today, has recognised the state of Palestine. In an early morning address, the Taoiseach Simon Harris said it was an important and historic day for Ireland and for Palestine.
On the 21st of January 1919, Ireland asked the world to recognise our right to be an independent state. Our message to the free nations of the world was a plea for international recognition of our independence, emphasising our distinct national identity, our historical struggle, and our right to self-determination and justice. Today, we use the same language to support the recognition of Palestine as a state.
Well, Paul Cullingham, the RTE political core, is with me this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
How has Israel reacted?
Israel has made it absolutely clear that it believes this is the wrong move. It has decided to recall its ambassador from Dublin back to Tel Aviv for consultations. But it would appear that further measures are going to be coming as well. But even before the three coalition leaders walked down the steps of government buildings in Dublin, Israel was letting its pleasure be unknown. That came from the Israeli foreign minister, Mr. Katz.
There's choreography around today, isn't there? While the Taoiseach was giving his announcement, two other countries were as well.
And I think that's very important that Ireland isn't acting alone. The first country to declare that it was going to recognise the state of Palestine was Norway. And Norway's important because all the way back in 1993, it was involved in secret negotiations between the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, and Israel to try and devise a peace process. And that delivered. The PLO recognised the state of Israel. Israel recognised the PLO as speaking on behalf of the Palestinian nation, and the hope was that peace talks would deliver a two-state solution, the thing we've been talking about for 30 years. So for Norway to come out at around, I think it was 7:30 this morning, and state it believes that it was going to make a unilateral declaration rather than waiting for any peace talks was an indication of how the tide was effectively turning against Israel. So Norway came out first, Ireland came out second, the Spanish Prime Minister went into their parliament at 8:30 Irish time, and we expect two further countries, possibly Slovenia and Malta, in the coming days also to come out and to recognise the state of Palestine.
When we're talking in the news cycle today about recognising a state, what does that actually lead to? Does it matter in the grand scale of things?
I don't think it does. There's due to be some technical briefings later on this morning from the Irish government in which they're going to articulate what they believe it means. But I think the power is in the words rather than getting down into a nitty-gritty conversation about what area of territory do you believe is the state of Palestine or not. And it's linked into a process which is taking place both regionally within the Middle East but also the United Nations, in which there's diplomatic efforts underway to try and forge a new mechanism by which peace talks could come to fruition. There's a sense that the horror of what took place on October 7th, in which Hamas massacred so many Israeli citizens, the military response from the Israeli Defense Forces, which has led to the deaths of so many thousands of civilians, that something has to come from this. And that's what the Irish government believes this declaration today is part of.
Okay, Paul, thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Continuing the callers this morning about the junior doctors and their strike, Samuel in Ards. Morning, Samuel.
Hello, Stephen.
Good morning.
Yep, good morning. Yeah, I'll tell you what I was ringing for. I was just ringing. I figure 62,000. I don't know where you get that figure from, 62,000, because junior doctors is classed up the. My two daughters, one of them done 5 years over in Cardiff University, has done her F1 in Cardiff, done her F2 in Wrexham, and has decided to come back to do her GP training in Causeway in Northern Ireland here. So she's taking a pay decrease to come back to Northern Ireland. But anyway, she's trying to get a mortgage demand to buy a house up in Ballymoney, obviously up there. But it's nearly impossible. Two lenders are going to give her money to get a mortgage. So on them figures, on her fee, she has to give her figures in for last year for her. And her was in the late 30s or in the 30,000s last year. Her wage for an F2 doctor last year over in Wrexham. And she's taking a pay decrease. Yes, you're saying about they're getting a 10% uplift in June time, which is good and stuff. But you need to get the correct figures. F1, F2, F3, that could be somebody who's been a doctor, a junior doctor for 8 years is earning that sort of money.
Well, the average total, we did quote the average total salary. Look, this is official Department of Health data.
It's average, Stephen, you don't understand. It's F1, F2, F3, it's year one, year two. See, my daughter coming out of university, she's got, because she didn't get in the Queen, she's got £9,000 a year debt. So she has for fees over in UK, which is £4,000 a year. £4,000 odd a year in Queens. She's got interest in that there. The government used to charge 1 or 2% interest on student loans. Now,
well, the Nutfield Trust is saying that F1 that you mentioned is £29,500.
Yeah. So that's a big difference from 62,000. So give out the correct figures.
You're giving out the starting salary.
Yeah.
What I was quoting, very clearly quoting Samuel, was the average total salary of junior doctors 2023?
But it's the ones at the bottom of the scale, Stephen, which is struggling. The F1s,
look, I hear you.
But it creates a problem within the workplace, because now you have midwives who doctors. My daughter's working with other people, other sectors within the health service. So they have midwives or other nurses or other people thinking junior doctors are getting $62,000. So my daughter's going in and trying to do a 12-hour day shift, are doing 6 days in a row, working with all their colleagues, and they're thinking, she's getting $62,000 a year.
Well, it's not what we have said here on the BBC this morning.
You're giving me that figure, 62,000, Stephen. It just looks like junior doctors. My daughter's a junior. So what's my daughter's class does? My daughter's class is a junior doctor. So automatically people think she's getting 62,000. My daughter has to buy a townhouse in Ballymoney because you can't afford to buy a cold range.
Well, look, Samuel, hold on a second. First of all, thank you for calling us.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving us the stats of what your daughter's on. But you know, we're reporting accurately in terms of an average salary. Just let me finish the point.
The strikers
are not striking on behalf of junior doctors who are just starting off like your daughter. So these strikes are not about let's get more money for year one junior doctors exclusively. So the reason why I'm standing over, given the stats that I am, is these strikes are people that are on, and do include people that are on, 60-odd grand a year, who are getting a 10% pay rise in June next month, included in the cohort of strikers. Do you see my point?
But, Stephen, it would be helpful if you give out the figures for year one, like you did, 29,000, year two, year three. Them kids are coming out of university, or young adults are coming out of university and have a huge debt. Like, my daughter's done 5 years to get year five paid for them, I think, but 4 years at $9,000 a year. They've got housing accommodation fees, they've got living costs. My daughter's got about £60,000 worth of student debt at 6.5% interest. You can get a mortgage for less than 6.5%. The government sneaked that up as well. So they've got all them costs. My daughter, by the time she pays out her student loan, which you have to pay every month, you have to make a payment every month, you pay your pension, you pay your other contributions. When I put the figures in to get the mortgage, there's only two lenders going to give her a loan of £120,000 to buy a house. You know what I mean? And that's basic. Where do you get a house for at their price? So that's a year two doctor or F1, F2 doctor. Who's earning that sort of money?
An F2 doctor, as published by the BMA, an F2 doctor, a house officer is what it's described here. Scale 1, 36,371.
Yeah, 38,000.
Scale 2, 38,666.
Yeah, so I'm not giving you false figures, I'm telling you the truth. So you need to give out them figures. But somebody's working in my shop, getting £12 an hour for working in my shop, doing 40 hours a week, getting £500, getting £25,000 a year to do a 40-hour week. My daughter's working 12-hour shifts, sometimes five and six shifts a week, and she's doing any hours they do extra. That's the problem with junior doctors. Any hours they do extra, they don't get paid for them extra hours. If my daughter has a problem or a patient was in difficulties and she's meant to finish her shift at 8 o'clock, she could be getting out at 9:30 or 9:45. She doesn't get paid for an extra hour and a half, whereas my wife's a midwife, she gets paid for extra time, or nurses get paid for extra time. Sometimes they don't put it down, but junior doctors don't get paid for extra hours. So my daughter could be getting paid for 40-hour week and doing a 50-hour week.
Yeah,
that's where the problem is. But that's the difficulty. You get a taxi man on saying about, I get 62,000 a year. And I'll say, but even if you earn over 50 grand a year, you have to pay 40% tax. You know what I mean? So it's all relative as well.
And then I look at the locum rate card, right? So the BMA...
That's completely different from year one, year two, year three.
It absolutely is completely different.
You've got to put the skills. You've got to put the skills. I'm talking about junior doctors.
Yeah, but the point I'm making here is that, look, the locum shifts in the lead-up to the industrial action in March, right?
I think something 62 grand a year striking is a bit crazy. You know
what I mean? It certainly begs the question...
Yeah,
Samuel, that if the likes of your daughter, you're telling me she's on 30-odd grand a year, right?
Yeah.
She's a junior doctor year one.
Year two, She's year two.
She's year two, so she's getting 38 grand.
29
right?
grand or 28 grand a year for year one, with all that pressure coming out and being treated, you know, the way they're treated by the consultants and everything else. I wouldn't do it myself. As times my daughter has felt like packing it in, you know what I mean? But
here's the point I was going to make. If you've got your daughter on around 30 grand a year, right?
Yeah.
And she's year one.
Yeah.
If you've got... for a foundation doctor, if you've got for a foundation doctor,
yeah,
the average salary of 45 grand a year,
yeah,
then there's a huge breadth in the salary range, isn't there, to bring that average to 45 grand?
Yeah, but if doctors, if my daughter done extra shifts and whatever else, they can bring the salary up, which brings the average up. But the problem is most of the junior doctors, 40 hours a week. Or 48 hours a week is a heck of a long time to do when you're in there and like a boiling pot.
I mean, a lot of
pressure up in the NHS. Like,
totally.
My daughter chooses not to do extra shifts. She does the basic because, and even coming back to Northern Ireland, she's taken a pay decrease coming back to Northern Ireland, but this is her country, this is where she wants to be. You know what I mean? And even with that, so I understand the pay, but then at the same time, if pay wants to be the same as England, Scotland, Wales, that's what I say, across the whole pay sector, if you want the same pay as England, Scotland and Wales, then you've got to pay the same bills as England, Scotland, Wales. So you can't turn around, like you say every morning about the rates and everything else. They're paying, my daughter's living in a flat over in Wrexham. She pays $6.75 a month. She has water rates. She has other fees and everything else. So the cost of living over there is a lot more. But we're wanting to pay parity of England, Scotland and Wales. But we're not wanting to pay student fees at $9,000 a year. We're not wanting to pay extra water rates. We're not wanting to pay... Yeah.
Listen, you're a really important call this morning. And I mean that. So thank you for doing so. A junior doctor at the Royal, who's on the picket line, Connor McGuigan, has contacted us. Connor, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Go ahead. Thanks for calling.
So I'm standing on the picket line with hundreds of my colleagues here because over the last decade or more, we have seen a huge erosion in our pay. We're struggling to pay bills. We're struggling to pay mortgages. We're working every hour God sends. There's been weeks whenever I have worked 90 hours in a week. If I got paid for every hour that I worked on those 90-hour weeks, maybe that would be one thing. But when you break my salary down and divide it by the number of hours that I work in a week over the course of the year, it's not impressive at all.
How much are you on, Connor?
Well, I'm on less than what Ben Lowry thinks I'm on anyway. I'm less than £60,000 a year. And I have been a doctor now for 8 years.
So, I'm not looking at exact figures, and it's up to you whether you keep your figure personal. It's up to you. But are you on 50-odd grand a year? Is that fair?
I would be around that number, yeah. I would be around that number.
And you're struggling in that number, are you?
What I'm trying to say is that between the hours that I do, the long days that I do, the night shifts that I do, the family events that I miss, I've recently had a baby, and that doesn't guarantee me getting out of work on time any day. There are days whenever I don't see him at all, from leaving the house at 7 o'clock in the morning till coming home at close to 11 at night. I have actually had to change my career plans because having been previously been a surgical trainee, I could not manage a work-life balance as a surgical trainee doing 90 hours a week. I could not manage to have a family life on that. And I really think that a lot of the time when you bring people like Ben Lowry on, they're giving a really falsified version of facts, basically. They're talking really about how we should be content with what we're paid. But Stephen, this isn't a race to the bottom in terms of pay. We're all very experienced people. We've put a lot of time into crafting our vocation. And for some people, it's tragic because they're struggling so much that they're having to leave behind the vocation, the job that they've trained their entire life to do.
And given the context of the amount of money that the executive has, is 9% of a pay rise, does that not sound, in the context of what other people are not getting, good, Connor?
The percentage pay rise that we've been promised now, that other doctors in other parts of the UK have already received, and yet we're still waiting on months later.
Are they back paying it?
It's really a good minimum starting point.
Are they back paying it, Connor, to last year?
They are. When we get back paid, I'll also get taxed on that. So I would have been much better off getting paid the uplift from the time that the uplift was agreed. Now, it's a good starting point, but really the biggest issue that I have is that we have a good starting point, and we have a Department of Health who have not been forthcoming in opening in negotiations towards what we want to achieve, which is restoration of our pay.
So you want 32%?
I want discussions on making our way towards that. Nobody's asking for that tomorrow. Nobody's asking for that this year.
But if you get it, Robin Swan's argument, if you get it as a junior doctor, then how does he argue against, and he doesn't see how he can, giving it to doctors and porters and other hospital workers?
And Stephen. But he is saying hospital workers across the sector are not paid enough for
he is saying that's £1 billion.
Everyone from band two up to the higher echelons of management. The band two porters and domestics in there are not paid as much as they should be paid for the job that they do. I myself worked for 6 years as a ward clerk on a band two salary. And when I broke down my hourly rate in my job as a ward clerk and compared that to my true hourly rate as an F1 doctor, I was probably getting paid as much per hour as a ward clerk as I was for all the hours that I did as an F1. But Stephen, the problem is that this health minister seems to think that it should be a race to the bottom in terms of pay, and that we should all be happy with the bare minimum. The porters, the ward clerks, the clerical staff, the healthcare assistants, the nurses, none of them are getting paid their true value for the job that they do.
Would you give this pay rise to then everybody in the public sector whose pay has not met inflation over the years?
I think there has to be real serious discussions about increasing the pay of all public sector workers.
That's billions you're into now, Connor. Billions.
And we need to have negotiations about how we can start to achieve a better pay offer for all public sector workers, including porters, clerical staff, nurses, junior doctors, and our consultant colleagues.
All right. Connor, thank you very much. Thank you for talking to us, Stephen. Thank you, sir, for talking to us from the picket line this morning. Very much money, a theme of the show today. The executive, 24 million of extra money will immediately be available for Stormont's budget. Follows an agreement by the Stormont executive and the UK government. How do we get our heads around this? One man can do that for us, the BBC Northern Ireland economic and business editor, John Campbell. I began to be asking him how significant this extra 24 million is compared to what we actually need.
It's the start of extra money. This is, if you like, the first instalment in what will be ongoing extra payments into the Stormont budget, because effectively back in February, at the time Stormont was being restored, the UK government at that time really acknowledged that Northern Ireland was underfunded, that we were getting less money than we needed to deliver public services to an equivalent standard as in the rest of the UK. And the way that they said that could be addressed was by topping up the regular bits of money which we get coming over from the Treasury. And I suppose the significant thing yesterday was that was backdated. So in the last Westminster budget, Northern Ireland was awarded £100 million. This top-up means we get an extra £24 million. And that is the pattern which will continue in the future. So after any budget, whenever a certain number is awarded for Northern Ireland through what's known as the Barnett formula, that will get one of these top-ups. However, I think the issue for many ministers, many politicians, is to say that these top-ups don't actually get us to the overall level of funding needs very quickly at all. And in fact, the independent experts on the Fiscal Council, they have worked out that it would probably take until the 2030s until we would get to the overall level of need. But I think one of the intriguing things yesterday from the Finance Minister, she was suggesting that the Treasury have effectively agreed that probably at some point next year there will be some sort of move to get Northern Ireland to that level of need much more quickly. Now, it's a bit vague exactly what that will amount to and how that will happen, and realistically it will only happen at the time when the next UK government lays out its broader spending plan.
Why is there the need for a top-up rather than them giving it to us in the first place?
That's a good question, and in fact at the time of the February negotiation the local parties are really suggesting that rather than using this process of top-ups, it should just happen in one jump. But the UK government was reluctant to do that. It did not want to retrospectively reopen bigger financial settlements across the UK, because I think had they done that, then you may have had other parts of the UK saying, well, what about us? So the idea is that these top-ups will be used initially, but like I say, it may be when we get the next UK government laying out their medium-term spending plans that we could see this big one-off jump. That was certainly something which the Finance Minister was hinting at yesterday, as I say, but the details of it are not exactly clear.
And this promise, this vague promise that the Finance Minister has been given by the British government that we will be brought up to the level of need. We've learnt in Northern Ireland when things are vague, that means they very rarely happen, or it takes a long time for them to happen.
Yeah, well, you know, it was interesting. I pressed the Finance Minister on this yesterday, but after her meeting at the Treasury, and she was adamant, saying, listen, we have been told we do not need to plan for the possibility that there's going to be some, you know, financial cliff edge in 2026 whenever the one-off funding from the £3 billion package runs out. So she seemed to be pretty clear about what she'd been told. Now, I know the leader of the Stormont opposition, the SDLP's Matthew O'Toole, has said, well, hold on a moment, this all, you know, looks a bit flimsy and a bit vague. And I see also Paul McFlynn from the Nevin Economic Research Institute writing this morning saying, well, it's not exactly clear how this is going to happen. But
it's worth hundreds of millions, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we're talking about these top-ups and, you know, the £24 million initially and other little bits of money coming along, if the government was to immediately change what's known as the baseline of Stormont's budget and bring it up in one leap, that would be much more significant. That would be a very big move, and maybe, you know, what would be required to put Stormont's finances on a more sustainable footing in the medium term.
Well, look, if Sinn Féin have been told it in an official capacity, will the British government write it down?
I think where there may be reluctance to do that is, like I say, this wouldn't happen until the next government is doing what it's known as a comprehensive spending review. And that would have to happen in the spring of next year. And effectively, at that point, the government, whoever it may be, would be laying out their plans for the terms of that parliament. So perhaps it may be that whatever has been effectively said behind closed doors, there may be a reluctance to actually, if you like, commit to it and bind the hands of a future government. So I suppose it is slightly unsatisfactory that we see that the Finance Minister is adamant that the, you know, assurances have been given, but for us to be able to kind of, you know, see exactly what those assurances are, we don't know. We don't have that written down very clearly in black and white.
And finally, John, when, you know, I'm doing the likes of programmes that I was doing yesterday, and we're talking about education support workers and the agreement's there, but the department saying the money isn't. Does any of this help things like that? Does it sort it?
It could potentially, because clearly there's going to be this extra £24 million, and there are some other additional monies, for example, money which came very late at the end of the last financial year from Westminster, which hasn't been allocated yet, and there's going to be what's called a June monitoring round where this money has to be reallocated. Now, I think there will be a lot of demands on that money. Certainly, I would imagine that the Health Minister, who was very unhappy with the budget, will be saying he should get all of it. But there are lots of competing demands around the executive table. And certainly the funding for those education support workers and their paying conditions claim, that is one thing. There are other demands there for special educational needs as well. So the little bit of money which has come initially, that will be eaten up very, very quickly.
John, thanks very much indeed. Thank you. And thanks for listening for today. That's the Nolan Show coming to an end. Don't forget the program's available on a podcast. And don't forget Nolan Live is coming up on BBC One tonight at 10:40. And, of course, the iPlayer. There's a lot of news around, so we'll see you in the telly tonight. And thanks for listening.
Biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.